Welcome to the second episode of Mind Matters, a five-part series looking at mental health. As mental health problems are on the rise, it has become increasingly important to promote the idea of positive mental health amongst young people and to provide them with the skills to cope with the challenges of life. Today's episode will focus on the development of mental health programs in secondary and third level colleges. We will hear from Jerry MacDonald from Feroiga, a national youth organisation whose purpose is to enable young people to actively involve themselves in their own development and in the development of society. Siobhan O'Brien from the Limerick Youth Service speaks about the work they do to foster a positive self-image and attitude towards mental health amongst young people living in Limerick. Trina Sheehy, a student at Mary Immaculate College, discusses briefly the Mental Health Matters course available to students every year. And finally, we will hear from Martina O'Brien, who also as a student in Mary Immaculate College, took part in ASSIST, the Applied Suicide Intervention Skills Training Course.
My name is Siobhan O'Brien and I'm a youth worker with Limerick Youth Service. Limerick Youth Service is established since 1973 and it engages a wide range of young people that cannot function within the mainstream education. So they come to the youth service where there is an ILP, an individual learning plan, drawn up for them, and we meet the young people where they're at and they're educated through that way versus a one-size-fits-all like there is in the mainstream education. We also engage mainstream kids then in the evening in different projects such as the Youth Cafe and a number of youth clubs around the city, and they also do group work with the kids, personal social development, cooking, music gigs, and a number of activities that the young people pick themselves to do because we're very youth focused. So anything that we do engage in, we ensure it's youth led.
Feroiga is a youth organisation. It actually delivers services to about 50,000 young people, and it has different areas. It has Feroiga clubs, but it also has lots of projects and youth services around the country. What it's mainly about is the development of young people, is to involve young people in their own development and the development of society. And probably what we mean by that is helping young people become more self-confident, more creative, develop their talents and abilities, but also develop positive relationships with others and strong connections with their local community.
The concept is Australian, and the HSC have taken it on here in Ireland. And the concept of it is to introduce young people to the whole concept of positive mental health. Now, there's a lot of stigma attached to mental health because when you think of it immediately, you think of someone's cuckoo, someone's mad, etc. So this is to break down all those stigmas and all those misconceptions about positive mental health. And with young people, it's about helping them identify and be able to verbalize their feelings, be able to identify coping mechanisms, identify resources in their life that would help them promote their mental health, and really introduce them to any services around the city that would help them just to live as normal a life and as healthy and physical a life as they can. Myself and another girl, we facilitated two different groups. I facilitated young people that were in school during the day and were facilitated in the program during the evening, while she facilitated the program with the young people that use the youth service during the day in a leaving cert or junior cert capacity. And the difference between how mental health was perceived between the two groups was huge. The young people in the evening would have a much more positive attitude towards mental health and would be very resourceful in identifying coping mechanisms, while the young people during the day would see mental health as oddball, counselling, 5B, very negative connotations, use of medication, that's the only way that mental health can be addressed and stuff. So that was very interesting.
We actually did a lot of work with them first. In fact, we engaged Tony Bates from Headstrong in the process as well. And we did a lot of work on, first of all, getting their understanding of what mental health is. And both to get their own view, what does mental health actually mean to them? And we got them to explore that, to write down their own thoughts on it. We got them even to do some artwork that represented what they saw as mental well-being. And then we asked them basically what Frege does well in promoting mental health with young people and what Frege could be doing better, and to come up with some sort of suggestions as to what Frege might do to promote positive mental health. Now, some of the drawings are very good. There was one about balance. There's always good things in your life and there's difficult things in your life. And it's to try and strengthen up the good things so that you can overcome the difficulties. There was another very interesting one, I think, was called the snow globe, which we thought was very interesting. It had a picture of the Christmas snow globe. You know the snow globe you get at Christmas? It's a nice little setting, and then when you shake it up, all the snow falls. I thought that was interesting. They said, like, mental health isn't always when everything's nice and rosy in the garden. That very often it occurs when things get shaken up a bit, when you're challenged, when you're in a difficulty. And very often that might be the best way of developing mental health. That very often if things are too rosy in the garden, there might be stuff that you're not dealing with or issues that you're not dealing with. So I thought that was quite deep and very good, you know. And there was another one, they had the image of a keyhole at the end, and they said the keyhole is surrounded by a lot of influences, layers of influence that influences a person's mental health. There are positive ones, but there are also negative ones like frustration, pressure, isolation, being judged. And he said that sometimes the key to the keyhole is that if you're feeling bad, to be aware that you're feeling bad, to acknowledge that and to accept it, and to be able to talk to somebody else about it. If you don't have that outlet or that way of opening up the door to yourself, that you can get into all sorts of trouble. And they said a lot of young people that get into real mental health problems have normal everyday feelings, but they don't allow themselves to feel them. They tell themselves they shouldn't feel that way, and they don't talk to anybody.
Sarah and myself, the other girl who facilitated, we would do a lot of cross-referencing to see how the different parts of the programme were perceived. First of all, it would the first really introduction would be, what do young people think mental health is? The second one then would be getting young people to verbalise their feelings. You know, like so many times, people aren't comfortable about talking about how they feel. And so there would have been a lot of training. How do we best explain how we feel? What are the words? What are the phraseology we can use to demonstrate how we're feeling? And then a lot of work would have been around coping mechanisms. So I feel like this. Who are the resources? What resources do I have to help me get through if I have some difficult, you know, I'm going through something difficult in my life? And then there would have been a lot of work around identifying, like mapping Limerick City about the different services that would be available to young people. But most of the work would be around coping mechanisms and that young people would need, and around being feeling free to talk about your feelings.
Young people need an outlet to be able to talk to others about themselves and what they're feeling, you know. And they need to be able to accept that it's okay to feel bad at times, that everybody does. And to be able to accept that and maybe have someone that you could simply talk to about your own feelings and thoughts. A strong one that came to me, that when they get blocked up and there's no outlet to discuss them with someone else, that they get bigger and bigger and bigger inside the person's head. And then there needs to be just as simple, and very often they were feeling, just to sit down with a group of young people and a caring adult to talk about general things in their lives and to build up enough trust to talk about when they are feeling bad is of great help. And prevents the thing building up inside them, you know. I thought that was one of the other ones. I go back to snow globe, but very often when something difficult happens, like in the club or a pressure or a challenge a person has, like exam pressure or stuff like that, that they can be really helped develop their own inner strength and resources to deal with that, and can be something that can screw you up or someone that can actually draw out your mental strength and mental health. For a person to develop particularly mental health, they need to be in a group where they feel safe. that they're not going to be bullied or put down or laughed at. So we need to create an emotional type safety within a group, you know. And a lot of groups and clubs have ground rules about stuff you can't or can't do. You know what I mean? That, you know, like put downs are excluded, or you can't laugh or mock someone. They should listen to someone, pay attention to them. And I think that's established in a lot of clubs. Now, one of the problems with it is that you can do these ground rules and forget all about them. So they need to be reminded and these are strong. But I think that's a strong one. Another one we're doing more of is actually creating time and space in the club where leaders and young people can sit down together in small group and just chat. You know, that very often it might happen or it may not happen, but I think special time and space needs to be put together for us. There might be a special room you can go into and talk to a group of people, or simple coffee time where you sit around and just talk about anything. If you want to get young people to really open up a bit and talk about how they're feeling, it doesn't happen unless they get used to talking in the first place about everyday things. So it could be simple chatting about the week or what happened last week or a soap opera the night before or anything like that. But we're building in more time and space to do that. Another thing we've done, we have developed a lot of learning materials which around mental health, and also gets people talking about feelings and values in a non-threatening way. So we're developing activities for a manual that some groups are beginning to try out at this stage, just to pilot them and see how they're working out. You know, but for instance, it might be stuff on values, on simple and feeling, actually, like, how would you feel if this happened? That kind of stuff, just to get people opening up about that. We do really want young people to have an active role in directing the organisation, and that we want some sort of channel by which we can really every year stay in touch with the views of young people and get their views, particularly on situations or issues that they're currently having in their own lives or in society. Mm-hmm. And one of the ways we do that is that we have what's called a reference panel of about 40 young people. And they are effectively elected up through the organisation democratically. They come from clubs up to regional conferences, and regional conferences elect about three or four of themselves onto a Frege reference panel. And the Frege reference panel meet about three or four times a year. And what they effectively do is discuss issues affecting young people, and to make recommendations to the organisation as to what the organisation might do about those issues. There's a tendency sometimes to maybe forget young people, to forget the kind of difficulties they're going through during adolescence, the pressures on them, such as exam and other pressures as well. And I think you need to be aware of that, to provide the services where they can be listened to, where they have an outlet to be heard, and to be able to engage with adults who acknowledge their experience and who can work with them in a way that gives them the opportunity to actually talk about themselves, you know. Just to quote Tony Bates from Headstrong, he said that what young people need is a living relationship with an adult who listens respectfully, allows them space and elbow room, and who only speaks when they've tried to see life through their eyes. So that kind of understanding of where young people are at and the opportunity to get them to express that, I think is very important.
I think sometimes we underestimate the capabilities young people have in getting through difficult periods in their life. I think young people are much more resourceful than we give them credit for. Peer education is huge. The only way to reach young people is through young people. So my biggest query was to mind out is, let's get a program that would facilitate young people to become facilitators of the Mind Out program, because I think that's the way to go. Young people supporting young people with the right resources in place. Someone as me as a backup or a co-facilitator. But I think we should appreciate the ability of young people to look after themselves.
The Mental Health Matters course is a peer-led initiative run by the Health Promotion Office at Mary Immaculate College. The course is mainly aimed at first-year students who are making the transition from second to third level education. Trina Sheehy, a student at Mary Immaculate, briefly tells us about the programme and what she learned by taking part.
My name is Trina Sheehy. I'm doing the Grad Diploma in Primary Education in Mary. It ran over 6 weeks. It's kind of promote mental health and to get people more aware about mental health and what can be done if you if you're suffering from bad mental health, that there are people out there that can help you, both here in the college and outside as well. There were different topics and different people facilitated the groups every week, and it was all facilitated by students. So every week, three different people facilitated the session, and then we would break off into smaller groups, and we'd have a discussion amongst ourselves in the groups, and then we'd relate back, or we'd report back to everyone, and we'd have a group discussion. Before the course, I suppose you could say that Utah mental health, you know, was for people in institutions and people like suffering from depression, but like mental health can affect anybody, and it can affect like your college, you know. It can be something, if something's not going right at college, your college work, even if you're not getting enough exercise, if you're not eating right, if you're not sleeping properly, that can all affect it. I didn't really know that beforehand. There was a stigma surrounding mental health in Ireland, and that I've kind of taken away from that.
Another course available at Mary Immaculate College is the Applied Suicide Intervention Skills Training Course, more commonly known as ASSIST. ASSIST trains participants to reduce the immediate danger of a suicide and increase the support for a person at risk. The workshop provides opportunities to learn what a person at risk may need from others in order to keep safe and get more help. As a student at Mary I, Martina O'Brien took part in this workshop.
I took part in the ASSIST course, which basically is all to do with prevention of suicide. So it means anything from being more aware of people around you and their, I suppose, attitudes, and just noticing the changes in people's behaviour. So if you do notice that someone's becoming more negative and more, I suppose, depressed, you kind of start. The most thing is to ask them out, right, what's wrong? Like, don't be afraid to ask them. If their answer is, I don't want to be here anymore, how to deal with that, how to, you know, let them speak, listen to them. The importance of listening is just so much more than being able to give them the right answer. For them to actually feel comfortable with you and to say those words, I don't want to be here anymore, and to actually be able to say that out loud is probably the biggest step for most people, because, okay, they're talking about it in their head, but to say it out loud, it really puts things into perspective for them. So, okay, it's horrible for you, that person, to hear that, and for someone you care about, or maybe you don't even know them, to say that, and just to kind of give a term of reference that that's how bad things are for them is the first step for many people to realise how bad things are. And so when you get to that stage, it's talking to them, talking and listening, and, you know, reminding them of, like, the people who care about them. There's different steps involved, obviously. I couldn't go through them all right now. But it just is like you repeat what they say. Don't be trying to put your own ideas. It's all about them. It's not about you. It's their lives. And maybe, like, they can't see the way out, but you can go through certain steps to try and help them to see if they can wait a bit longer and see if things do get better, because once it's over, it's over. Up until about the mid-90s, suicide was actually a crime. And it's like, who are we to say, you know, okay, obviously I don't want anyone to ever take their own lives, but if that person is in the depths of despair, I would not count them as a criminal. And that's where the term committed suicide came from. So when you're using, are you talking about suicide, you should never say committed anymore. It's not a crime. Nobody should be ashamed of their family members. They might be disappointed and gutted, and, you know, that's the stigma around the whole topic. We need to talk more about it, because how else are people ever going to feel like they're not on their own? You just need to bring more awareness to it. Different people suffer in different ways. Since I've done the course, I have had to put it into practice. So it involved somebody I know and who wasn't in a great place, and I needed to ask them out, basically, were they thinking of taking their lives? And they said they didn't specifically say that. They said they didn't want to be here anymore. And that's generally what, you know, nobody will come out and say it because they're ashamed and they don't want anyone to know how they're feeling. So it's kind of like you get them to kind of say it out loud, and then you talk to them about it. And what are they feeling? Who would care about them? Who did they care about? How would they feel how did they think they would feel if they did do that? To try and bring them back to, I suppose, not thinking about everyone's better off if they're gone. It's like, if they did it to you, how would you feel? And kind of make them think about it a bit more. Now, they've probably been thinking about it an awful lot. And that's another step, is basically if somebody has been thinking about it, then they're probably more than likely going to go through with it. But if they haven't yet decided how they're going to do it, then there's a better opportunity to help them out. So if somebody's already tried to do it, then they're at a bigger risk. And it's just all about recognising these risks of how great the risk is. So as I said, if somebody has not decided how they're doing it, then they're only beginning to get into the depths of despair. If they've started to talk about how they're doing it, remove those elements, remove the dangers from around them, you know, until they kind of, you've had a chance to get them to help. And then it's where to go. I mean, a lot for all of us, we might have been in some situation where somebody's in dire straits. Where do you go? So the course makes you outline a list of people you could contact, whether there be personal friends or, you know, groups or people in society who you could ring. That's also a great list to have, because in the midst of all this happening, you're like in your head going, who can I call? And if you have that little card in your wallet, you have a list of people. And at the time I said I was in the situation, I rang the Samaritans. So like, even for the person who's trying to help the person in despair, it's great for them to be able to talk to somebody and, you know, how are they feeling? But again, your immediate aim is to help this person. So, you know, the things like Samaritans and other groups are there to help anybody, whatever their problem, whether the person who is experiencing the difficulty or somebody who's worried about someone else. They're there to talk. And talk is all they do, and sometimes that's the best. They can't really recommend what to do because everybody's different and you do need to seek medical help. But if you can get them that far, it's a great help. I always would have felt that suicide was selfish. Now, I don't think it's as selfish. I just feel sorry that, you know, if someone did take their lives, that I wasn't able to spot it, firstly, and that they didn't feel comfortable enough to come and talk to me about it. An interesting part also of the course was when we actually did role plays about the situation you could find yourself in. So one of the course leaders took the place of somebody who might be feeling suicidal, and you know, you had to approach that person and put your skills into use. So we all found it really difficult because, like, everyone's watching you. You're trying not to say anything stupid because that's what we're always worried about. If you say one thing wrong, you're afraid this person might go through what they want to go through with. So you're putting yourself in that position. You're trying to think of what would you say. And the best thing to do is actually, even if you ever are role playing, is to listen to what the person is saying. Repeat what they're saying. And then maybe getting them to maybe approach that person and start telling them how they feel, and you're there as a support. So if you do talk them off that wall, or, you know, pull them away from that bridge, or stop them from doing whatever they think they're going to do, the next part is empowering them. And so, like, you might get the person to come to the point wherever you are, to the cafe down the road from where you say this might happen, and then what you need to do then is give them the power back to tell them. Don't be their voice. They need to get that voice back to themselves. So if they're going to meet this person, but they want you to do talking, then try and persuade them to tell them a little bit more themselves, because it's going to come across for both people very difficultly. You're in the situation where you don't know this person, maybe from Adam, and you're bringing in their friend who knows them quite well, and there's going to be a defence kind of straight away. Who is this stranger trying to tell me my friend is not well? when my friend is sitting here quietly, like, you know, it's just such a confusing thing, because for most of us, we don't realise things are that bad. So the important thing is to get them to realise who the friend they could talk to. You know, what's the worst thing that could happen if they did tell the friend? If it did happen, then, and the friend reacted badly, you need to find someone else. I mean, we're not trained to deal with this, but you have to think of it in terms of, you try your best. Okay, God forbid, you might try it and it doesn't work out and somehow that person does hurt themselves. It's worse if you didn't try and help them. You can only do so much. There is a point where if you start to feel unsafe, you will have to pull yourself out of the situation. So you don't know what that... If that person is thinking of taking their own life, they might be thinking of doing it in an extreme manner. And so you need to make sure that you're safe at the same time. Okay, you're trying to help them, but you don't know how emotionally charged this person is. So be aware of your surroundings and, you know, if things do turn bad, how you can get out of it safely. If you're in the vicinity of something that they're going to do and it's going to hurt you, then get out of it. There is that, most importantly, you are number one priority in that situation. You're trying to help this person, but sometimes people can't be helped, unfortunately. So the role plays were really good. You know, I remember going up to the person and trying to get them off the chair, and it was like about keeping them talking, about, you know, telling them things aren't great for you either. You know, like, and you're not going to have a whole negative, you know, talk about things that are really crap. But I think they need to just know that, you know, there is other people out there who don't have great days. Mm-hmm. But it's how they deal with the bad days and get to the good days that you need to talk about as well. I don't think you'd do the course unless you wanted to put yourself in that position. And as I say to you, if you didn't do the course, OK, you might be able to deal with it. But I am a lot clearer on how to do it now. And I suppose more confident that I could help someone, and maybe it won't work out the next time if I have to do it, but I prefer to have the knowledge rather than not have the knowledge.
You've been listening to episode 2 of Mind Matters. Tune in again next week for the third installment of this series, which will look at mental health organisations. Mind Matters was written and produced by Wired FM. The series was funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland through the Sound and Vision Scheme. Wired FM would like to thank all those who participated in the making of this series. And for further information on any of the matters discussed in this episode, please log on to www.wiredfm.ie.